Hey everybody, Stu Smith here going live. I hope you are well this Monday morning, Labor Day morning. Enjoyed your Labor Day weekend. I want to discuss a few things. Got a great idea the other day where someone emailed me and said, hey, you know, I'm a really good runner. In fact, I'm training for a marathon, but the guys in my platoon, when we ruck, they ruck so much better than I do, but I can outrun them. And he was just asking why. It's a basic question. Even though he can outrun them on a 3-mile test. These guys were Marines, but he could not outruck them. And obviously, he was kind of understanding what was happening, but how could he make this better for him? And so I used an analogy that I've never used before. It just kind of popped up in my head, and I wanted to run this past you guys while you guys congregate on here and start asking questions, because I will do some live Q&A at the end of this little discussion. But think of it as like three different groups. If you've ever been in a group of people, whether it's a team or a military group, there's typically three groups of people in there. You got your endurance athletes that are typically lean and skinny, really good at running, maybe swimming as well. And then you got your former power athletes that are bigger, stronger, not necessarily the fastest runner, but do okay. And you got the hybrid guys who maybe have done multi-sports in their athletic history. Maybe they were really, and this is typical, they're typically really small when they first start high school. And so they may do an endurance sport like swimming or cross-country, things like that, and they get really good at their cardio. Then maybe they have a growth spurt somewhere in that first, second year. They get a little bigger. They put on some mass, maybe not ideal for running anymore, but they go play a different sport that's a little tougher, that requires some lifting. Like, when I say tougher, I mean just impact sports that are just bruising on you. So they lift a little more and they play football and they play lacrosse, or they go wrestle, you know, where there's an upper body strength requirement as well as good cardio. So they go into this high school, post high school career, looking into military service, and they're this really well-rounded athlete where they've worked on their endurance, they've worked on their strength, and I call them the hybrid athlete, kind of like my unicorn athlete that I have, and we got a couple of them right now that are wrestlers who can swim, right? Those guys do really well. Pound for pound, they're really strong. They're not the biggest guys, not all of them, but there's a weight range. But they're strong pound for pound, they have great endurance, and if they can swim, they do really well at training like recon or SEALs or things like that. So I came up with this analogy. Let me know what you think. You got cars, trucks, and SUVs. So your cars are your runners, your athletes, right? You're running at endurance athletes. Maybe you got two types of cars in there. You got your, regular cars that are pretty fast. They can't carry a lot, but they can go fast, right? Then you got your sprinters, who are kind of like the drag racers, that go for 40 yards, 100 meters, 400 meters, and anything after that's long distance, right? They'll probably blow up if they run longer than that. Talking about the cars. So you got your running athletes and your sprinters, two different body types altogether. So these are really kind of two groups in one, because those sprinters tend to have some power to produce speed. They have some strength foundation in there. They just can't go for very far. So their weakness is kind of longer, slower distance type stuff. So they need to work on their muscle stamina and endurance. Whereas the runner or swimmer or rower, you know, they need to work on their strength, whether that is upper body strength, pushing, pulling, leg strength. They got the muscle stamina all they want. They got the endurance for days. They just need to be a little bit more durable, which is going to require a foundation of strength. So that's the cars. Then you got the trucks. And the trucks are those guys that can just throw in a bunch of weight in the back. You know, maybe not the fastest on a track, but off-road with a load, they're in the front of the pack, right? Those are kind of like the strength power athletes that might have not really thoroughly evolved into an endurance hybrid yet. But they got that foundation of strength that makes them durable. And when they run, they're a little slower. But when they ruck, they're a little faster compared to the lighter runner, right? They're a truck. They can carry more stuff. They're not as fast as a car, but they can carry more stuff and go faster than a car. Then you got your hybrid athletes, like we mentioned, the kind of the unicorn athletes, multi-sport types. Those are the SUVs where they can carry a load. They can go pretty fast. They're not the fastest, but they're not the slowest. They're not the weakest, but they're not the strongest. They're like right there in that middle. And that's really what I call the tactical athlete, if you think about it. They just need to be good at everything. Don't need to be great at any one thing. And I'm speaking stereotypically here. Obviously, there are unicorns in this group that are great at something, and they've worked their weaknesses to a point where there's no longer a weakness and they're just really good at everything, maybe with a few great things in there. You know, because there are small guys who are strong. There are big guys who are fast. Those are the unicorns I'm talking about. And I would say it's, you know, if you look at a class, if I think of like multiple classes that I've been involved with over the years, I might have about 5% of, you know, let's say there's 100 people, 5% of them are this unique unicorn where they're big. They're like 220, 230 pounds and can still run a 6-minute mile and do 30 pull-ups. You know, that is very rare. Or the small guy who might be 135, 140 pounds, who's good at everything, and he doesn't get crushed under a log because he's just got this wiry pound-for-pound strength that just came through hard work and hard living. You know, so everybody's kind of all over the place. I'm speaking in stereotypes whenever I'm talking about the cars, trucks, and SUVs. You know, there are freaks of nature out there that just amaze you that, you know, there's a guy 230 pounds that is running faster than you and you're sitting at 185 or can do more pull-ups than you. Those are people that are just unreal to behold. But many of them are kind of grew up in that hybrid world where they did multiple sports. They worked multiple energy systems growing up where they worked that endurance energy system. They worked that strength and power energy system. And they're just good. They're just, they turn that, you know, use that athletic history to turn into this machine. I'm not saying it's possible for everybody, but you can still get really good at everything. And here's the best thing about it. I've been talking about athletes. You don't need to be an athlete to be in really good shape, right? You just need to be able to work in a way where you progress with your strength training. Then you do a cycle of calisthenics and cardio, and you progress with your endurance and muscle stamina training. You got that foundation of strength that is now getting a little bit more work capacity added to it. And then you come back around, you do it again. Next thing you know, you got durability with work capacity put in there together, and you got yourself this nice little hybrid athlete that is capable of doing things like load-bearing activities, rucking logs and boats. You can run fast. You can run through obstacle courses. You could run for days if you needed to. You could swim long distances. You could swim short distances and fast. You can do high rep calisthenics. You can go in the weight room and lift. You know, when we talk about what a tactical athlete is, you really have to be good at all of those things. And you don't have to be great at any one of them, just good at all of them, right? There's no world-class athlete needed in these professions, right? To get through SEAL training, you don't need to be a world-class swimmer or a world-class runner, and definitely not a world-class lifter, because there's a lot more swimming and running than there is load-bearing in SEAL training. So when people say it's your cardio matters, it really does, because that's probably going to be the biggest thing that gets you kicked out of there, is failing 4-mile timed runs, number one, failing a swim, number two, not being able to complete the obstacle course because your grip is not good. And then, you know, the other parts are just being cold and wet and miserable and handling discomfort. But those first 5 weeks are very front end loaded on load bearing. You're going to be basically in the soft sand with boats and logs, carrying people. And that load-bearing activity, specifically talking about SEAL training, is what gets most people in those first 5 weeks. So you need to go in there with some durability, but you also need to go in there with an extra dose of multi-discipline cardio activities. That means running, rucking, swimming. And that's the journey, folks. So which one are you? Are you a car? Are you a truck? Or are you an SUV? And remember, there's two types of cars. There's your standard cars, and you got your, what do you call them? Race cars, I guess? Stock cars? What are those cars that do like the quarter mile sprints? Drag racers. That's right. So, truck. So, if you're a truck, you probably got your strength and power taken care of. You need to focus on muscle stamina and endurance and grip. You know, some of the bigger guys, remember me talking about grip crushing the obstacle course? If you're a bigger guy going through that obstacle course and you're wondering why 15 obstacles in, you can't hold on to anything. Well, if you're 210, 220 pounds, that's a lot of stress on those grip muscles. And you got to work them. You got to have a good grip. So, yeah, endurance. Cows and cardio. It's all you. My personal recommendation, if you're a truck, go with this. Right? Especially if you've never done much running, you've never done much cows and cardio. If you're kind of you're pretty good at the cows and cardio, but you need just a little more. This one's a great one too. It's mostly cows and cardio, has running, rucking, swimming, pull-ups, push-ups, sit-ups, got a little bit of lifting in the back end side for the performance test that you got to do. All right, this is funny. More of a moped Vespa scooter. I'm not quite sure what that is. Maybe that's the non-athlete getting into this journey. That's a good analogy. I got to use that one later. That's a good one. All right, let's see here. Lots of pull-ups. Okay, as a bigger guy doing ruck training, 6'2", 210 pounds, was planning on going to 70 pounds from 50 to provide more challenge, but not sure if my bag will hold up. Does the vest count? To be honest with you, I would not necessarily worry about going heavier. I would focus on just going a little bit faster versus going heavier. Now, it also depends on what you're trying to do. Like, if you're going to Bud's, you're not going to see over 50 pounds in any of your training. You might see 60, 55, 60. But, you know, even in third phase, you're not going to be rucking crazy amounts. Like, if you go to Marine Corps or Rangers, you know, those guys are going to be rucking hard. You know, some of those, like, infantry guys in the Marine Corps are 80 pounds minimum, right? Some of them are even over 100-pound rucks. So that's a different level. So it really kind of depends on what you're doing. So think of it like you're the truck, right? You may need a bigger truck, right? If you're going to go with a 100-pound ruck or, you know, 75-plus-pound ruck, right? Versus, you know, the smaller truck, right? So anyway, is what I'm saying is, depending on where you're going, and you can answer this below, depending on where you're planning on going, I would either go faster at a lighter weight or increase to a heavier weight, depending on where you're going. Very close to me. I'm pushing 220. And I have more mass. Yeah, 220 is big, especially in this journey. And if you're flirting with, what, 6'1"? What are you, 6'2", 210? That's good. You can handle 210. It's just you got to make sure your grippers can handle 210 or drop down to 200, depending on where you're going. Thought my grip was awesome till I went rock climbing with my girlfriend a couple weeks ago. Yeah, you know, rock climbing's a different story too. You definitely need more. That's tough. That's the tough test, rock climbing. You know, you do that for a very long period of time versus like the O course is like a 7-minute run through at Bud's. It's hard, but it's only 7 minutes long, right? So you don't have to necessarily have the grip of a rock climber to get through the O course. So just remember that. That was my best years of fitness when I did lots of cross training with running, swimming, cows, and weights. My best 3 mile was a 17:23. Woo! That's good, sir. Good, sir. Nice. That's a good 3 mile run. But yeah, you're right, man. Cross training is key. And if you're trying to be a tactical athlete, a military, police, firefighter, you just really need to be good at everything. You know, that 17, like, take it this way. I mean, 17:23. I mean, you're somewhere between a 5:30 and a 6-minute mile with that time. And while that is really good in the military, it's nowhere near collegiate cross country. Like, you won't make a cross country team with a 17:23. So you don't need to be any faster than that, right? If you're coming in with a 15-minute 3 mile, chances are there's a lot of other things you cannot do because you are just that fast. So everybody comes into this journey with a certain amount of strengths and weaknesses. And if you can get those strengths, and some of them, you may need to get those strengths, let yourself lose a little bit of stuff. Because I was a heavy powerlifting guy, and, you know, I didn't lift weights for a solid year before, you know, I became a really good spec ops candidate. Because I needed to work on my muscle stamina and my cardio. right? It was that bad. It wasn't horrible, but it was just that bad compared to what I needed to be. And I was still one of the stronger guys in the class, even though my max lifts dropped 25-30% easily, you know, when I was focusing on cows and cardio. But my cows and cardio went up 50-60%, which they needed to do. So if you can't get out of the weight room, or if you're a strong guy, do you really want this job? And same for the runners. If you can't get into the weight room, do you really want these jobs? Those are the types of questions. If you can't stop running 70 miles a week, if you're a runner, you know, 15-minute, 3-miler, you know, do you really want these jobs? You're missing out on a lot of other elements of fitness that will be tested. And I promise you, your weaknesses will be exposed on your first week of any military and spec ops training. That I will assure you. How much rucking in the Air Force CCT pipeline? A lot. You know, I would put that up there with Army level rucking. So you're going to see rucking significantly. Hey, Stu, do you think that if I'm tall and skinny, okay, you're going to have to do some, quick conversions from metric, because you got to remember we're Americans over here. We don't do that metric stuff. 184 centimeters to feet. My Google machine says you are 6 feet tall, just a little bit over 6 feet tall, 82 kilograms. I can usually kind of figure out that's pretty lean. 82 kilograms to pounds is 180. Yeah, 6 foot, 180. That's not bad. That's actually pretty good. I was 6 foot, 195 going through SEAL training, and I was probably, in hindsight, just a little too big. I will say the 195 worked real well while I was going through those first few weeks of getting, you know, under boats and logs and through Hell Week. Cool thing about SEAL training is after Hell Week, you don't touch a boat and log on your head again. Very handy, right? So I actually dropped down a little bit to like 190 because it really started to turn into faster runs and faster swims. Lots of high rep cows and faster O courses. So that lighter weight on the back, you know, two thirds of buds, you know, getting through second and third phase was very helpful, being a little lighter on that side. So to answer your question, do you need to gain weight or not? It's kind of up to you. Depends on your strength numbers. You know, if you can go in there with a solid strength background, little foundation of strength under you, and be kind of like a 6 foot, 180 fast and strong, that's good. But, you know, for me, I always felt probably at my strongest at that 195, but I wasn't too heavy to slow me down for running. So that was kind of like my sweet spot. And be honest with you, that's where I try to stay for the rest of my life. I'm like 6 foot, you know, maybe a little shorter now after 30 years post-buds. And right at like 204, 205. So trying to get down to 195 and call it my bud's weight and stay there forever. So your question is it better to lift weights and get bigger and some calisthenics to aim for PST and through time get bigger? At 17 years old, you will get bigger because you probably are not through growing yet. Now, the only problem is you may also get taller, which could make your height to weight ratio a little bit more challenging for you. So you're going through growth spurts. All you have to do is feed it, right? Eat well, you're going to grow, right? And by the time you're 21, 22, you're probably done growing at that point. So that's one reason why I tell teenagers they really have no business doing these spec ops training jobs, is most of them aren't even through growing yet. And they're just, their bones are softer because they're still growing. They haven't really solidified. So they are very susceptible to stress fractures, shin splints, you know, those type of injuries. And, you know, it's just harder on them. You know, they got to eat more just to not lose weight. So anyway, it's just, that's just one of my recommendations, opinions. We all have opinions. Wanted to go to CRO. From what I've read, a heavy ruck and swim, emphasis at A&S. Yes, I would agree with that. So run, ruck, swim. Highly recommended. All of those will matter. You know, and that CRO test is no joke. I would call, you know, those combat rescue officers and the special tactics officers, you know, that fitness test to get into that training is kind of like a combo between the BUDS PST and the Marine Corps. Because you got to run a 3-mile run instead of the mile and a half. You got to run, you got to swim 1500 instead of 500. So it's emphasized much greater the level of cardio that you will need. So yes, running faster, swimming faster and longer, and rucking. Absolutely. Ruck your ass off. So durability is key. 6'3". All right. That's tall. Running hills and valleys with a lighter ruck increases fitness level increases. Yep, I like that. Definitely listen to the Marine on rucking. I mean, he is the professional rucker over there. It's rare if I'm hitting 25 pull-ups and run a 6 mile. I would like to get a 6-minute mile, maybe. I would like to get lighter, but genetically I have a lot of muscle mass and have a very large frame. I know it's okay. Okay. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm not getting your abbreviations. Don't speak text language very well. So I know it's rare, but I'm hitting 25 pull-ups and run a 6 mile. I'm assuming you mean a 6-minute mile. Cause a lot of people can run 6 miles. Also depends on how heavy you are at that level. I can't remember what your height and weight is. Oh, you're pushing 220. Yeah, that's big. If you're hitting 25 pull-ups at 220, that's impressive. Chances are there's another weakness, though. And we got to find out what your weakness is by assessing you. You know, what's your timed runs? What's your lifts? What's your shuttle runs? You know, what's your hang time? You know, how long can you hang on a pull-up bar? You know, all of those things come into giving me a good idea where your strengths and weaknesses are. In fact, if you want a really good tool I use all the time, check this out. I just put a link in the comment section. It's just my assessment tool that I've used for years that I've seen people that I have assessed personally that I've seen make it through BUDS and SF training and Marine Corps training, infantry officer school, recon, MARSOC guys, PJs, you know, if they are hitting these numbers, they are doing really well in those schools. And I've been doing this for a long time. So I've got a lot of statistics that support these numbers. And people who've gone on to do very well in these professions. Currently have a 5.5 mile for my PST time. I definitely want to get that to sub 9. I would recommend that too. Any tips on getting that 1.5 mile run time down? Yeah, learn how to run a 6-minute mile. Learn how to run multiple 1.5 minute 400s. Run as many as you can. Until 400s are easy, and then up it a notch to 800s and see if you can get an 800 in 3 minutes. Now, notice what I'm saying here. I'm not saying run your 800 in 230. I'm saying run your 800 in 3 minutes. Run your 400s in a minute 30. You need to learn your pace that's going to get you a 6 minute mile. I call this goal pace running. That's the number one way to do it. And you want multiple times a week working on your goal pace. Now, you can spend one day of the week doing some sprints. Nothing wrong with that. Doing some hills, doing some soft sand running. That's all great. Then spend another day if you want doing a long, slow distance run. But if you're not used to running that many miles in a week, you may want to do more non-impact cardio. Some of the worst advice I've ever seen people get with running is, unfortunately, from a running coach who is used to coaching runners. And he's going to give you this template of saying, yeah, if you want to run, you need to build up your volume, get up to 40, 50 miles a week, whatever that is. And, you know, you got some kid who's never run before getting this advice. And it's horrible advice for that person, because what's going to happen in 2 to 3 weeks, that kid's going to be injured with overuse injuries from running too much. You've been running slowly, but you've been running too much. So my advice is check out this article. Running plan to help you get to and through selection. So this is only 20 miles a week. If you're not at 20 miles a week, just cut one of the runs out. If you're at 15 miles a week, that'll probably do it for you. But you might have to make adjustments and make this personal for you by adjusting some of the mileage. Instead of running 3 or 4 miles one day, you just do 2, you know, whatever that is. But learn how to run at your goal pace. Read that article. It will tell you how to do it. Any tips on front flip portion of the drown proofing test? When I practice the back flip, it comes very easily and naturally, but the front flip's all discombobulated. Good word. And end up going with the side flip. All right, so think of it this way. You're on a trampoline or a diving board. What do you do as soon as you hit that bottom? Like, you need to treat the bottom of the pool like it's a trampoline or a diving board. So as soon as you kick off of that bottom, you immediately turn, bend over 90 degrees. So now your force against this water, you're going up, is going to like curve you this way, right? And then a couple of dolphin kicks, flip you right back over. So treat that bottom like a diving board and you'll get that front flip and that back flip for the same purpose. You know, you could practice on a diving board and a trampoline too if you wanted. It's going to be a little bit different, but it's the same thought process. As soon as you kick off, you bend over 90 degrees, couple kicks, flip you over. Hey, Stu, when I'm done boot camp, is there still a modified PST you have to pass, or just normal PST you have to pass? Yeah, you know, there's not going to be a test at boot camp. You know, you're going to go to boot camp and go straight to, well, you're going to take the normal PFT that the Navy has, which is push-ups, plank, and a mile and a half run. Has nothing to do with your buds one. You don't want to fail that one, though, which I don't think is possible for most people who are trying to go to buds. But you will take a normal PST when you get to prep. And unfortunately, talking to a couple of prep courses recently, there are people who fail that PST when they show up and their Spec Ops dreams are done right there. So it is that important. You know, a lot of people say, oh, don't train for the test. Well, bullshit. If you don't pass this test, you're done. So you need to know how to train for it. You need to know how to strategize so you perform at your best. You know, that's why I write programs like this. Crush that PST. Easy day. You should be able to crush the PST like you pass drug tests, or you pass, you know, somebody's waking you up in a surprise PST and you got to go do it, right? You should be able to pass the PST even after a workout. And we've had guys, you know, work out with us that would do like the 6 mile run, work on leg day, you know, while we're doing it. Fireman carries up these hills, and then they say, well, I got to go take the PST. I'm like, damn, you go take the PST after this workout? He goes, yeah. You know, I didn't want a PST to mess up my workout. Now, I will say this. This is like well into getting the contract. So he's months in depth already. So taking this PST is like no big deal. For your first PST, you may want to be well rested, ready to go in there, crush that thing, be at your best. But then after that, it's not, you really need to start focusing on getting through training and not just focusing on the PST. You know, if you can do a PST after a workout, you might be ready. 6 minute mile, no problem. 220, 6 minute mile, 25 pull-ups. You're definitely a unicorn. But the only weaknesses I've seen some of those guys have is grip strength. And I've seen one dude could run, could swim, load bearing, no problem. PT, no problem. Did well in pull-ups too, but he failed the obstacle course and got kicked out of Buds. So it does happen. Now, I will say he was big, and he running on that beach was, he was a little slower. So he wasn't running 6 minute miles for 4 miles. You know, he's probably closer to 7.5 minute miles on the beach for 4 mile timed runs. But he could run a 6 minute mile for the PST. All right. So I run a 9:45, 1.5 mile currently, and want to get that down. That's perfect. Nothing wrong with that. Learn how to run a 6 minute mile. That's what you need to do. Learn how to pace yourself. Your first lap is going to be a 1:30. Your second lap is going to be 3 minutes. Your third lap, 4:30. Your fourth lap, 6 minutes. Your fifth lap, 7:30. Your sixth lap, 9 minutes. That's what goal pace running is. Easy day. Now, if you got a little juice left on you on that last lap, you might be able to pick it up, maybe hit 80, 85 seconds and break 9 minutes. But that is strategically planning your mile and a half versus just saying, I wonder what I'm going to get. Unfortunately, stupid people do that and they have no idea what they're going to get and they fail. So, I shouldn't say stupid, unprepared. And if you're unprepared going into a PST, yeah, you're stupid. I was just a hybrid athlete my whole between football and soccer. Okay, I'll give it to you. How's your swimming? Because that's another segment of this journey. If you're going, you know, Spec War, Air Force, Marine Corps, Navy. Any experience with fibula injuries? Fib tips? Yeah, a little bit. After swimming with fins, I experienced a bit of an ankle pain, which seemed to move to my lower leg. Putting any pressure on it hurts, making it hard to squat and run. Well, here's the problem. This happens all the time. You know, depending on what is actually going on, chances are you just have immobile ankles. So you need to work on your ankle mobility. So when you put on a pair of fins, it's not stretching them to an extreme of your range of motion, right? That's why I like to recommend people who've never worn fins before, get an easy pair of fins to start off with, then get the issued rocket fins or jet fins, build up to those. Otherwise, your ankles are going to hurt. Your ankles are going to hurt anyway. So I remember everybody that, including myself, everybody that puts on a pair of fins for the first time, usually got about 400 or 500 yards of swimming with them in before their knees and or their ankles hurt so bad that they can't even kick anymore. So you got to take them off, keep swimming a couple hundred yards more, loosen up those ankles again, see if you can put them on, maybe put on an easier pair of fins, finish up, you know, see how far you can get. And then each week it's going to get better. And it takes about 4 to 6 weeks before you quit hurting when you swim with fins. So my first thing is you just need more ankle mobility. However, could you injure it through swimming with fins? It is possible. Maybe you could have torn something. I don't know. But it goes up. It's going to go up into your leg a little bit. You know, ankles, you know, think about all those ligaments that are keeping that ankle stable. You need to work on your ankle mobility so much that when you point your toe, it has 0 degree angle and it looks like a ballerina's point. So you want to loosen your ankles, go to YouTube, search ankle mobility, ballet, and just try to do anything that they're doing. All right. But eventually you will be able to swim with fins. In fact, check out this article, because if you have tight ankles, you're probably having a hard time treading, maybe even egg beater. But there's a stretch that I like to do that helps with swimming with fins, and that is sitting on my shins, feet, toes pointed out behind me. I'm putting my butt on my heel, and I produce no daylight. Like this is let's say this is my foot here, right? And my ankle is my watch. There's no daylight here between my foot. So I guess it would look more like this, right? My foot is this way. So if you can see daylight where your ankle fibula meet, whenever you are sitting on your fins, your ankles are so tight, they need to be more mobile. Right? If that hurts sitting in that position, they still need to be more mobile, right? You should be able to lean back and stretch your ankles to a point where it's beyond that 0 degree angle. In fact, I might even have a picture in here. In fact, check this out. So this is, I put an article in there too, by the way. Check out this picture. This is the picture I'm talking about for treading. These three stretches right here really help you with your treading issues. Let me move this out of the way here. Treading and swimming with fin issues. This first one up here is called the frog pose. And if you notice, my feet are flexed out. And this is basically kind of like a breaststroke kick angle, right? Now, try to go vertical with it. And that is a pure breaststroke kick angle. And if you are trying to tread, I'm using all of this, my shin and my ankle, like I'm kicking a soccer ball down to the bottom of the pool. So this is the up position, and then the down position is my feet going straight, right? My knees are straight. But I'm putting all the power of my shin and inside of my foot going straight to the bottom, so I go up. Now, for swimming with fins, this is the one I like to do swimming with fins. You can see how there's no daylight here between my foot and leg. That is where you need to be. Let me see if I can. I don't know if I can show this any closer. Yeah. Can't scroll up. That's all right. Maybe that works. All right. So anyway, you can see that. Do that stretch. If you can do that stretch and it doesn't hurt, and do that stretch and lean back, even better. So I hope that gave you some ideas there. Trying to find another stretch I like to do. That's all right. All right, let's keep on going. I got a few more. I think I just answered this one. I just ordered your Air Force Special Warfare Training Guide. Is 35 pounds a good starting weight for rucking? Yeah, 35 pounds is good. How many miles is a good start? One or two. You know, keep it light. You know, no need to go nuts with it. You know, and if you're adding more rucking to the program, you might want to do that progressively as well, right? Do it on leg days. And if you're going to add more rucking than's in the program, maybe take out some of the miles of running depending on where you are. But it also is personalized for you. If you're going to personalize it for you by adding rucking or adding mileage, make sure you're being wise with it and it's not just some arbitrary number that you're saying, oh, well, I only run 5 miles a week right now, and that's all I've really been doing for the past 2 weeks. Before those 2 weeks, I haven't run at all in 2 years. And so this third week, I'm going to do 25 miles. That is not logical, right? A logical progression is you adding in about 10 to 15% per week, each week, as long as you're not feeling any running pains. If you're feeling running pains, you got to stop that progression or go back down in reverse and do less running, maybe more biking. You can still get all the cardio, just less the impact. So let's say you have a 5 mile run on Saturday, but your shins are on fire. You just like, there's no way I can do this. So you turn that 5 minute or 5 mile run, might take you 35, 40 minutes to do. You turn that into biking, rowing, elliptical, some non-impact cardio. But if you're okay, maybe you just do 20 minutes of that 5 mile run and then spend the other 20 minutes on a bike. You get all the cardio of that event with half the impact. So just be smart when you're adding mileage and rucking mileage. I want to do a workout where I run along the beach for 400 meters and then swim 100 meters 10 times. Are those good distances? Yeah, I like those. In fact, I call one of my favorite workouts, probably the first workout I ever learned from a Navy SEAL. I was going through what we used to call mini buds back in my day, and the now it's called SOAS, SEAL Officer Assessment Selection. We had to do a run, swim, run, swim, run, swim, run, right? Where you ran hard for like 400 to 800 meters. You swim out 100 meters and back, or 50 meters and back, you know, depending on whatever your distance is in the ocean. So you're swimming perpendicular to the beach versus parallel to the beach. And then you run another 400 meters down the beach, swim back out and back, and do that again, out and back. And then you come back 400 meters back, 100 meters out and back, out and back. You do that 10 times, you got yourself, you know, 400 meters, and you got 400 meters times 10 is 2.5 miles and 1,000 meters of swimming. That's a good workout. And you do it fast, too. It's not a jog. It's fast. Do you think the taller guy should aim to learn wider grip push-ups and execute it on the PST? Depends on your arm. I would go a little bit wider than shoulders. I don't have long arms, and I've performed some of my best PT tests with my hands just wider than my shoulders. I wouldn't go too much wider. That's going to be a lot more on your chest than you need, but I wouldn't bring it in too close because that's a lot of arm and tricep that you're working. So find a spot just wider than your shoulders, don't keep your elbows in. You want your elbows, you don't want your elbows up like this, and you don't want them in like that. You want them right in the middle. So 45 degree angle. So just remember, you don't want them like this. Don't want them in here like this. You want them 45, right? Something I like to do is put my hands, instead of being at 12 o'clock, put one at 11, one at 1, 45 degree angle with my elbows to my torso. That is a good push-up position. Just a little bit wider than your shoulders. Do you know about South Korea's UDT seal? Yeah, absolutely. In fact, we had two South Koreans in my buds class. And they're still in today. I think they're at South Korea's version of SEAL Team 6, actually. So yeah, very tough guys. Very tough guys. Hey, Stu, I think you already said this, but I am not sure. What type of fins should you recommend to buy? I'm an experienced swimmer. I guess it depends on what you're training for. If you're going for any spec ops job in the military, they typically will use two types of fins, the rocket fin or the jet fin. They look just alike. Really depends on who got the contract that year, depending on the branch of service. Good news is most people buy both because the contracts kind of go back and forth. They have stockpiles of both of those. I personally, out of the two, like the jet fin better than the rocket fin. No offense against the rocket fin. I just have found the jet fin to be more comfortable, a little more pliable, easier to break in, those things. But just as effective as the big hard fin that gets you through the currents. And that's really what you're using these big scuba fins for. Not necessarily for speed. You're not going to be faster with these big fins on in a pool. So if you're worried about, oh man, my 1,000 without fins is 17 minutes. My 1,000 with fins is 17 minutes. That's great. You know, if you can do 4,000 at the pace of a 17-minute 1,000, that's going to give you a 34, 2,000, and a 68. 4,000, which is well below, or I should say well above the standard of 85 minutes, minimum standard for first phase buds, 2 mile swims. But yeah, rocket fins or jet fins. If someone's a good tactical athlete, but carries some extra fat, could that be a positive thing because of the cold water? Absolutely. If you look at most guys going through buds, I would say over 50% don't have six packs. They might have that four pack and a little extra on the bottom, but they don't have six packs and they're not thoroughly ripped. Some are very lean and they freeze their ass off. Some are not. Most are not. What's the best alternative to swimming alone in the bay or ocean when you don't have any swimming buddies? You know, that's a tough one. I've done that a few times. There are little buoys that you can tie to your waist. So one, people can see you. And if you have any problems, you can hold on to that buoy if you needed to. The other one is swim parallel to shore and only be 4 feet deep max. So if something happens, you just stand up. You know, we swim in the Chesapeake Bay out here, and we go down and back, and that's a half mile. So we do a couple of round trips of that to get a mile and a half, 2 miles. And if anybody has a problem, as long as they're inside those buoys, they are only 4, maybe 5 foot deep. So find an area if you're swimming in a bay or ocean that is just shallow. So it's not that big a deal. You're swimming in a shallow pool. As long as you're not doing breath holds, I think you'll be all right. But definitely have a buoy. So boats see you. Also wanted to mention the Cooking with Stu posts are very helpful. Thank you. Yeah, well, thank you. I appreciate that. I saw a couple people are like, what is this? Kind of annoyed by it. But I am, to be honest with you, Raul, I am doing these for my son. My son is a junior in college. He lives in an apartment with four other dudes, and none of them know how to cook. and none of them know how to shop for food. So part of my idea that I had was, you know, he didn't have the patience to go shopping with me, and he didn't want to watch me cook too much. I mean, I showed him how to cook a few things, you know, but he just didn't work out. He had other things to do. So I was like, what's a good way to teach him? I'm just going to make a bunch of memes and teach my son how to cook through what I know he has time to do. And that's look through a phone like this. So that's kind of what I've been doing. Yeah, is what it is. I hope other people will learn about it. I got a bunch of bachelors that train with us that I know are using it as well. I even had a day the other day where they all came over and I made burrito bowls for everybody. And I wanted them to compare it with Chipotle. And so my burrito bowls cost them $3. I didn't charge them, but cost me to make $3 burrito bowls versus, you know, paying what, 10 more, you know, for a burrito bowl at Chipotle. How many meters or miles should I be swimming and running a week? Well, we get this question asked every week, don't we? And the answer is, it depends. It depends on what you want to do with your life. Do you want to go run triathlons? That number is going to be different. Do you want to go to Buds? Number is going to be different. Are you going Army? Definitely going to be different. Or Marine Corps? About the same. So it really depends on you. And it also depends on where you are now. Because I'm not going to say you need to be swimming 15,000 meters a week and running 40 miles a week if you haven't started swimming yet and you only run 10 miles a week. So, big boy, the answer is it depends. I'm glad you like them. Thank you. If you can only run four times a week because the other days are WaterCon swim days, how would you program those four running days? Well, it depends. You know, why don't you run on swim days? I would. I mean, chances are you're going to be swimming and running if you go into a Spec Ops program on the same day. In fact, you may even run, swim, and ruck on the same day. So I wouldn't necessarily break it up like that, unless it's just you don't have time to do it because you're busy. There's nothing wrong with doing both. On your WaterCon swim days, I mean, you can still run. Why don't you run to the pool? I would say this, though. Work on your four running days a week. Make 2 to 3 of those being paced days. Make your fourth one be a sprint or a long, slow distance day. On your, if you want to add a fifth one on there or even a sixth one during your WaterCon swim days, just do a standard, just go for a run type of thing. Just to get some miles in. Or if that's too much for you, do a bike instead of a run on your swim days. So unfortunately, you know, there's really no right answer to this. I program it in a certain way, and I do have an answer. Like in these programs right here, you're going to see probably 5 swims a week and 5 to 6 runs a week. Except for one day will be a mobility day. So probably just 5 runs a week. You're going to see upper body, lower body splits. Probably 3 upper bodies, 2 lower bodies some weeks. Sometimes 3 lower bodies and 2 upper bodies some weeks. Sometimes just 2 and 2. And an extra cardio day. So they all kind of bounce around a little bit just to test you. See where you are on your programming and your ability to handle 3 leg days in a week. Because I promise you, you're going to be doing lunges with a log on your chest. You're going to be doing lots of squats with a log on your shoulder. Might do those 3 days in a row at Bud's. Not that you need to train like that to do it. You just need to be durable enough so you can handle it. Back to running after shin splints. Do you still suggest a non-impact week in week three? I highly suggest it. Especially after an injury that caused you not to run. You got to treat yourself like a beginner runner. Those first 2 weeks are kind of a progression. Let's see how you handle it. All non-impact cardio that third week. Or I am happy to compromise with take whatever you did on week two, cut it in half, but turn the other half of that running time into biking or another non-impact cardio activity. That would be my compromise to someone who may not need the full week off of running. But you need a full week of cardio still. Just it really depends on your susceptibility to shin splints and other injuries. DIY burrito bowl. Yep. If you're wondering how I make those, you can check it out on my Instagram. Because I've been posting some food posts on there lately, which are kind of fun. And my son is cooking for his roommates and they love them. So that's really all the feedback I need. As long as they're eating healthy and not spending all their money on food, we're teaching them something. All right, guys, I guess that is it. It's been an hour. I'll be back tomorrow with some CSS critiques. Send me some videos if you want me to critique them. Check out stewsmithfitness.com. If you use the Live15 coupon code, you can save 15% on books and ebooks. Remember, this thing works on likes. So give me that thumbs up over there when you can. And tell others about it, because I do these every Monday, 9:30, and every Tuesday at 9:30. And happy to answer your questions on both of those days. So bring some questions. I'll give you some answers. All right, folks, I will check you later. Have a good one.